Hello, I'm Ken McLeod, Principal Teacher at Unfettered Mind. Our website is an ongoing effort to explain Buddhist practice in a way that is clear and accessible to the Western mind without dumbing it down. If you find these teachings useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can continue to maintain and expand the site. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind. How to practice right speech and action.
So let's turn to the next two. And by the way, the Eightfold Path is presented in this order, and I haven't really figured out exactly why this order. There's usually some deep meaning in that. But it's not practiced in this order at all. They all interlink it with each other in all kinds of ways. So it's actually a little difficult to discuss them as separate entities. But because already in this we've been tipping into effort and things like that. So I'm going to talk about speech now. And the speech is a really easy one to talk about because it makes. With speech, what I'm trying to say is probably clearer than with any of the other aspects of the Eightfold Path. Now, right speech is described as truthful, gentle, or kind would be better, harmonious, it's not quite the right word, I'll explain more in a minute, and relevant, or timely. The opposites are lying, speaking harshly, speaking divisively, and gossiping. So, now, you're in a situation, you know, what's it like to try to speak truthfully, gently, harmoniously, and to say something that's relevant and timely every time you open your mouth? What's that like? Yeah. It's a big effort in control. Most of us just wouldn't open our mouths. But anything that comes out would be very, very contrived and artificial. And this is what I mean. This is why I think this approach is of trying to practice the Eightfold Path by employing the descriptions is just so self-defeating and frustrating. Because the descriptions are descriptions of the results, not how you do it. Now, how do you practice right speech? Well, it's the same principle that I've talked about up to this point. You bring attention into the action of speech. And how do you do that? As you speak, listen to the sound of your own voice as if you were listening to another person. Let me say that again. As you speak, or when you are speaking, listen to the sound of your own voice as if you were listening to another person. Now, this is exactly analogous to the people who had spending habits of tracking every expense. They brought attention to their spending. Here, you're bringing attention to your speaking. Now, the first thing you will find, or one of the things, I don't know, it'll be the first thing you notice, is you never know what you're going to say until you say it. We don't actually know what words are going to come out of our mouth until they come out of our mouth. How many of you have gone into a meeting or sat down to have a conversation with someone and you knew exactly what you wanted to say, and when you opened your mouth, something else came out? We don't actually know what's going to come out of our mouth until it comes out of our mouth. So it's really important to be listening to the sound of your own voice as if you're listening to somebody else, because then you have a chance of hearing what you're actually saying. Now, how many of you have been in situations where you weren't aware of what you were saying? There was a great one with the last British PM. He was on a live mic, and after talking to this woman, he said, "Oh, she's bigoted." He wasn't listening to himself. And it caused him endless amounts of grief in the rest of the election campaign in Britain. So, when you do this, you will also hear when there's an edge in your voice. So you'll hear the anger or the edge immediately. You'll also hear when there's fear in your voice, when there's excitement or joy in your voice. You'll hear this immediately. You also hear when your mother is speaking through you, or when your father is speaking through you. And you go, "That was strange. Who said that? That wasn't me." But it happens like that. Now, as you do this, because you hear this immediately, then you immediately start to adjust. And you either stop talking, okay, let's try that one again, or modulate the tone, or whatever. And there's a tendency I have when I'm teaching a guided meditation. I slip into a way of talking, which is really great for guided meditations. It makes everybody peaceful and calm, etc. But that's actually the problem. It makes them go to sleep. Call it spell talk. And lots of people do this. Now, I've trained myself so that by listening to the sound of my own voice, so that most of the time I catch myself when I go into spell talk. But I don't catch myself all the time. Then I depend on somebody else to say, "You're doing it again." But that's been very important, because if I'm giving a guided meditation and I'm using spell talk, I'm working at counter to what I'm trying to teach people. I'm trying to teach them people awake while I'm putting them to sleep. Not a good idea. And if you listen to various teachers, you'll find that some of them talk completely in spell talk. You know, there's one teacher, I won't mention names, but I thought, this is when I first started teaching, I thought, he's a very good teacher, I'll play tapes, this is before CDs, so that I can learn how to teach while I was driving. And when I almost had two accidents, I thought this was not a good idea. Because all his teaching, he just puts people into this very feel-good things where they're completely asleep. So another thing is, maybe you put people on edge all the time when you talk. Okay? You start listening to the sound of your voice as if you're listening to another person. You'll begin to hear it. It may take a little while, but you'll start to hear it. So this is all about bringing that quality of attention to speaking. And what evolves are these four qualities. You know, every now and then, circumstances lead us to say something that isn't true. How do you feel about that when that happens? What's that like for you? I mean, how many of you had to do that in the last week or 10 days or something like that? What's it like? Joe?
What's it like?
Do you feel good?
Oh, no.
Why not? Makes life easier, doesn't it?
Well, no, it doesn't, as a matter of
fact. It seems well, why like do you do it then? To,
but it doesn't. But it's always to, it seems to avoid something, to avoid a confrontation.
Yes,
avoid something that seems like it would be worse.
Yes, that's right. But you don't feel very good about it.
No.
Now, as you bring attention to your speech over and over again, what's likely to happen here?
You're going to get more uncomfortable, for one thing.
Well, one thing, and you're probably going to decide, well, actually, saying what is not true is worse than facing what's inside or facing the conflict. So maybe I'll just face the conflict and say what's actually the case.
Yeah.
But you're going to do it in a very different way. You know, you aren't going to do it angrily because you know that's going to make things worse. And so, this is what I mean about if you practice right speech this way, listening to the sound of your own voice, then your speech evolves into, well, saying what is true, doing it gently, not trying to create further conflict with it. That's what we should. We shouldn't say divisiveness here. We should say conflict. That would be much better. Why didn't anybody think of that before? And doing it timely. You had a comment on this.
Sometimes when you say a little white lie, you're not really even aware of it until you said it. And so I think when I catch myself doing that, it's after I've said it, it's almost embarrassing.
And now the cover-up starts.
Yeah.
So if you were paying attention to the sound of your own voice as you were speaking, would you be more likely to catch that little white lie before?
Probably
not. Yeah. Because I know what you're talking about, and I'm saying, and I'm listening to the sound of my voice, I said, this isn't true, and I just, I gotta stop right now. Regroup. And figure out how to say it, because I can hear, no, I'm now trying to deceive this person. And it can happen really fast. Perry, you had something?
Yeah. I guess what's happening for me lately is when I make a little white lie is there's a sense of missed opportunity and, you know, a sense of sort of disappointment and, missed opportunity. Like, there was a possibility for more intimacy or with them or for me to know myself better or for me to come out or whatever it was.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because just as Joe is saying, we say something that is untrue so that we don't have to pay attention to something in our experience. That's why we lie. It's to avoid something in our experience. And what you're referring to there is that's the missed opportunity. Okay, Marie, did you have something? Steve?
I've noticed that when I do that, I'm feeling much more compelled to really look at why I felt I had to do that. Yeah, look at the reasons for what was going on that made me do that in that moment. Like the conflicting yeah. aspects of...
If I can make a suggestion here, don't actually ask why, because that keeps you thinking. Ask yourself instead, what was I experiencing right there? That's going to move you out of the thinking. It'll be much more fun.
Yeah, it usually relates to some discomfort.
Exactly. And, and rather than the why, just open to the discomfort. The why will be there,
yeah.
But it'll be much more fruitful to ask what there than why. Just trying to help here.
Yeah. You know, that's why are you here?
Yeah. Steve, could you pass the mic back here?
I've had sort of a different experience with that when it comes to truthfulness, and everyone's talking about this sort of negative thing about telling a white lie or not telling the truth. And my experience, and if I ask you what you think of what I'm saying here, is that what's been more important to me is to listen to what I'm saying and think about the consequences as opposed to just saying it. Because I find, if we think about it, there are many instances, I think, when the truth is a hurtful thing, or it's not a helpful thing, or it creates... And there are times when I found that by being more mindful, I can stop myself from what might be telling the truth, but causing harm.
You're quite right, Steve. Right speech doesn't mean telling the truth all the time. It means telling... I have to be careful how I construct this. A lot of people interpret it means we have to tell the truth about everything. No. Sometimes you just keep quiet. Because as you say, the truth is going to be hurtful, and you don't say anything. And that's very important.
Because I think you can get into trouble into thinking, doing this practicing thing, now I'm truthful. I'm always going to tell the truth.
Yeah, but that is exactly the kind of problem that I think you get into if you try to practice the results. If you bring attention to the act of speaking, then you may be saying something that's completely truthful. You may be saying it gently. But you realize, this isn't the right thing to be saying right now. It's not timely. And so you just stop. You go, no, okay. You just stop right there. And I think that's exactly right. So, but if you try to adhere to those characteristics, then it's a very conceptual, contrived process. What I'm trying to say is that if you bring attention to that, then the speech is going to self-adjust, or your speaking will self-adjust, and you won't get caught on being truthful at the cost of exactly the kinds of things that you're talking about.
I guess lately I felt that there is always some possibility to be truthful in the moment if I stick to my experience.
Yes.
You know, if I simply say, you know, as I hear you say that, I'm feeling all tingly in my chest and I'm having a hard time catching my breath and... You know, whatever's there, and it's true. It's what's happening, and it can reflect some anxiety or something else without them having to have any feelings about that whatsoever.
Yes, that's another approach, and it's a very, very useful one. I'm glad you mentioned it. In difficult situations, if you talk about your experience, then you don't add to the conflict because nobody can argue with your experience. They may not like that you're having that experience, but they can't argue with it. And you're not attacking them. You're not saying, you did this to me. You're just saying, this is what I'm experiencing. Yeah. Okay. Last point for this evening. Is right action. Now, action... Under right action, what we usually find are what are called the 10 virtuous and the 10 non-virtuous acts, which are not to kill, not to steal, not to have inappropriate sexual relationships, not to lie. The next ones are speech, and they're the same ones: not to lie, not to speak harshly, not to create conflict. Not to gossip. And then the three mental ones, which are not to harbor malevolence and jealousy or envy or wrong views. These are regarded as... summarizing right action. And again, those are very good principles. My teacher taught them ad nauseum. He just went, anytime anybody new showed up at the monastery, we were going to get a talk about the 10 non-virtuous acts and the 10 virtuous acts. It was just, mm-hmm. Anybody knew, he'd start right at the beginning, that's what he taught. Again, I find the principle of bringing attention to the action in exactly the same way that we talked about it with respect to speech. Okay, what am I doing here? What am I experiencing in doing this? And often when we do that, we may have a completely inexplicable gut feeling. It just doesn't feel right. And that's part of our experience. I do a certain amount of business consulting, and one of the things that I do in that is help people strategize conversations they're going to have with somebody. And there are often a lot of different things that they have to balance. Sometimes they will have more information than they want to let the other person, they want to let the other person know that they have all of that information. They're trying to get a certain result. They're trying to avoid something over here. So there are a lot of things to keep in mind in these conversations. And we'll spend, sometimes an hour or more strategizing that conversation. And in the course of that, particularly with this one person I work with, and worked with her for many, many years doing this, we'll come up with an idea, well, maybe the conversation can go this way, and then one of us will just say, that doesn't feel right. And we're paying a lot of attention to those gut feelings. And after that, it doesn't feel right. Usually we can attach a reason, no, that's not going to work because of this and this. But the feeling comes first, and the reason comes later. And this is why I say emotion trumps reason. When we really pay attention to what we're feeling, and experiencing emotionally and physically, then there are a lot of things that we do automatically that we just wouldn't do. So bring attention to action. Now, I have to say this. Bringing attention to action, which in today's parlance means acting mindfully. You can tell I'm a little fed up with this word, mindfulness. Doesn't mean doing everything in slow motion. I mean, I have these notes here. Doing everything, the way most people practice acting mindfully is equivalent to reading like this. N-O-T, not. L-Y-I-N-G, lying. S-A-Y-I-N-G, saying. W-H-A-T, what? Now, is this how we read? Do any of you read this way? Did any of you read this way? Maybe, when you're really at the beginning learning how to read, that's maybe how you learn how to read or practice very early stage. And that's how most people think of acting mindfully means. Now, acting mindfully means your attention is in the action. And if you're moving quickly, your attention is in the action as you move quickly. And if you're moving slowly, your attention is in the action as you move slowly. And if you're moving jerkily, or you're moving smoothly, or whatever, your attention is in the action. You're right there in it, sensing everything that's going on. Now, when you actually do that, there's much less jerking that's going on. But it's a case of practice. Most people, when they start moving or acting quickly, their attention is gone. They don't have the ability in attention to actually stay present in the action. And that's when the reactivity starts. And I have a whole workshop on that about power, because power can be described as the ability to be present in action. Because then you always know what you're doing. And people, probably the best area to see that in action with highly trained athletes or martial artists or dancers or things like that. They know exactly where they are all the time. Why? Well, if they're martial artists, their life depends on it. So they know exactly where they are, no matter how quickly or how slowly they're doing. That's how you train in that. There's one way of training anyway. And so being able to stay in action, in speech, in whatever we're doing, with that quality of attention, that is how we practice right action. And that, in the same way that I've been describing, as we do that, you know, you can just do it when you're walking. I have a very simple way of practicing attention in walking. I call it the log rolling method. Now, I'm from Canada. Not that many people roll logs anymore, but they used to. You know, you had these big trees, and they would get them rest, and people would stand, these guys who put them in rest, they would stand on them with spikes. And this developed into a sport, which is still practiced, like at the Calgary Stampede, where they put these logs in, and two people stand up, and you spin it to make the other person fall in the water. But there you are, rolling the log. You have spikes on your shoes, it makes it easier. Now, when you're doing this, you're walking like this, the log rolls underneath you. So, when you're walking, imagine that you're rolling the earth under your feet. You're not going anywhere. You're just rolling the earth under your feet as you walk. Now, when you do this, you can walk completely naturally. You don't have to walk in slow motion, as in the Ministry of Silly Walks. You can walk completely naturally, and your attention will be completely in the action of walking. Why? Because if you imagine that you're rolling the earth under your feet, your attention is going to go to the bottom of your feet, the sensations there. And because we're so habituated to attention up here too, we'll be in both places at the same time, and thus with everything in between. So now we are fully in our body as we're walking. And the sensation of, I'm not going anywhere, I'm rolling the earth beneath my feet, it's as if the whole, everything is coming to us. So our attention now includes everything that's coming to us. So with just this way, you bring complete attention into the act of walking and experiencing everything that arises when you are walking. That's how you practice right action when it comes to walking. Well, you can work out the other ones for yourself. But you can try that. Let me know next week. So, here we are. 9:30 already. Let's just sit for a moment and we'll conclude. Goodness comes from this practice now and then. Let me not hold it just in me. Let it spread to all that is known and awaken good throughout the world.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.